Transbound us both from all around the world. Get a grace on your heroes, a prayer about the losers. Open up your minds and shout it on. Oh yeah, they can.
Right, welcome to yet another edition of Silly Point, the Couch Experts' very own cricket podcast show that brings together fans and experts from around the world to discuss current affairs of national and international cricket. In case if you're wondering why Gautam's voice has grown hideously unbearable, do not worry, it's just that Gautam and myself have swapped roles for this episode, and Gautam instead will be sitting amongst the three panelists voicing his opinions on the topics that we're discussing today. Gautam, as always, great to have you with us here today. How are those Dusras coming along in the nets?
They're chucking along pretty well. Thanks a lot for that, Chandra.
Chucking along pretty well. And just for the record, following our podcast show the previous week, where we briefly touched upon Gautam being a possible Indian immigrant replacement for Sunil Narain, I gather that the average number of Google searches featuring your name has gone up by 99.96%, a very significant number for those of us who follow cricket. Gautam, do you sense a pattern here?
I'm not too sure of this 99.96. I have no idea about this. But in any case, I think you would make a better living as a fiction writer than as a business consultant that you are currently.
Okay. Sometimes I wish that too. So it's great to have you on the other side today.
Thank you.
Moving on to introducing our second panelist. I dare say I can call him an expert and still get away with it. He started out as a management graduate working for multinational banks, but switched careers midway to cricket. He started his cricket writing career with Cricbuzz in early 2009. He was the first person to join Cricbuzz in an editorial role and spent 3 years with the company heading the editorial desk during his stay. His cricketing assignments included following the Indian cricket team during the 2011 World Cup. Let me take the pleasure of introducing Saurabh Somani, currently the assistant editor of Wisden India. Saurabh, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot.
Saurabh, how easy was it for you to make a switch from the corporate world to cricket journalism?
It was actually very easy when I think about it in terms of the decision in my mind, because this was always something that interested me, whereas selling mutual funds and insurance was not really that interesting. So it was difficult from a practical point of view to make the switch, but to make the decision to switch was not difficult.
Well, it's good to hear that. I seriously hope that a lot of us are inspired by this brave decision that you've made. We look forward to hearing your opinions through the course of the show.
Thanks.
Today we also have a third panelist here. He's not a new face to the Couch Expert. He came into prominence with his article titled Woo GB Fan, and his popularity ratings rose higher with catches and stumpings from behind the wicket for the Couch Expert Cricket Club. He has since moved to Richmond, Virginia, and from what we hear, he has traded his wicket-keeping gloves for a baseball glove. Muthukumar Ramamurthy, how true is that?
That's interesting. Yes. Yeah, wicket-keeping gloves, baseball gloves. Yeah, no, I am. Baseball will never be a cup of my tea. Still, wicket-keeping gloves. My wicket-keeping gloves, I left it over there at Bank. Itself looking for a suitable pair of gloves over here. Still finding out some arena wherein I can show my skills over here. Shape my skills further.
Okay, Muthu, thanks for joining us, and we seriously hope you don't get sidetracked into cricket. I'm sorry, baseball rather. So without too much further ado, we'll move on to the first topic of our discussion today, which focuses on India A's tour of the West Indies. And it's important to keep in mind that this isn't as much about the result of the game as it is about the concept of A teams. Gautam, let me begin with you. I know we've debated on this in the past. Let me take you back a few weeks around the time when the selectors had announced the squad for the A team that was to tour the West Indies. I know this was during the time that the IPL was still going on. And when you looked at it, there were two things that kind of struck you immediately. One, the batting pool wasn't too different from the team that toured England 2 years ago. And when I say this, I include Riddhiman Saha, the wicketkeeper, as well. And secondly, there was a complete overhaul in the bowling department. And we've noticed this in the past, the sport being, biased against the bowlers. What was your interpretation of this in the first sight?
Chandra, I mean, two ways to look at this. I mean, I'll give my two cents on what I make of this team. As a concept, the A Tour, I'm not very satisfied in terms of how the board goes about making the plans for these things. For example, I think a year ago, this time when we were getting thrashed in England, we had an eight side playing in Australia. And if you remember, we had the likes of Umesh Yadav, Varun Aaron playing there, and it sort of made sense because we were actually planning to play in Australia later in the year. But if you look at it currently, I mean, why West Indies? There is not a Test match series there in the vicinity, there's not a World Cup around the corner in the West Indies. I mean, why is it that you will need our team of these players playing there, or what is it that you're trying to do with these people? So that is my entire basis of these A tours. I mean, if you look at a team like England, for example, they might have their alliance touring the same country when their senior squad is playing, so that you know that at the same point in time, there is another set of people that are playing in the same conditions at the same time. So if you want to pick a player, you know a person who's actually been in the system or who's been out playing the same conditions, playing similar bowling. And you know a person is in form or not. So that way, I think is a lot more visionary in terms of how you plan your A-tours. And I wish our board would think on those things. Coming back to your question, I'm not really sure what to make of this bowling side. But one thing that really sticks out like a sore thumb is the introduction of the all-rounder Jalaj Saxena. And if you look at his first-class record, I think he averages 30 with bat in 40 games, and I think is even worse with the ball. I think he averages about 41. So you know how our selection policies are, and you know how 16, 15, 16, 15, 16 people, when they pick, how things are going to be. And the moment one of the top Ranji bowlers, like in TP Suvendra from Madhya Pradesh, could not be picked, so for the spot fixing scandal or whatever else, you will probably have to go in and swap him with another person from MP, and that is how this concept of or this selection can explain that way. Otherwise, I will not say that I'm terribly disappointed, but I do agree to some points that might have come across from people like Akash Chopra, wherein how do you deal with the concept of an eight, or I mean, historically, we look at our A-tours as series that we send only people who might not really have experience of those conditions. But
Yes, yes.
you should also look at it from a perspective in terms of the core set of people that you really want them back in your squad, like Harbhajan Singh, for example. But I wouldn't rate Harbhajan Singh at this point in time being anywhere close to for a test recall. So many ways to look at this. For now, I'll leave it with my initial thought, saying that our entire process of the concept of A Tour is good, but what you make of the A Tour in terms of how you plan for it and when you schedule and how you do it is really poor.
It's interesting, Gautam, that you mentioned that because we have seen this in the past. I mean, let me take Gautam's latter point forward. There's always been this lack of consistency when it comes to selecting bowlers, and I'm going to stick with bowlers for the time being. I mean, I know it's a trait that we've observed for years, but let me throw this issue for you to gauge from a different perspective. I mean, we talk of all these youngsters who need to be propelled into the A team, to just gain the necessary international experience. Conversely, Saurabh, do you see a compelling case for A Tours being a platform for those who've already gained experience at the international setup, but due to some setback, maybe form or injuries, have not been able to make the cut back into international cricket?
I mean, you have Cheteshwar Pujara and Rohit Sharma there, and Manoj Tiwari, who have all played international cricket recently. So it is it's not as if it's comprised, this particular A team is also comprised of guys who haven't played at all. So Rohit Sharma was part of the test squad, you know, in the last test tour, but he's still part of this A team. So I mean, yeah, it's like, it's not like it's not there, right?
No, but I'm looking at. Yeah, I agree. But then, you know, there are players who've had their careers marred in injuries. Let me take you back to a point of time. Let's say when guys like El Balaji, for example, they were very unfortunate to miss out on, you know, coming back to the international setup because they had their career marred by injuries. They went back to playing Ranji. Guys like Abhimanyu Mithun, who played a test match in West Indies and then was not considered as a replacement for our injured bowlers in England. We had RP Singh fly over instead. Do you see a lack of consistency in the way the selectors go about taking calls along these lines?
I'm sorry, can you just repeat that?
No, what I meant was you rightly had a point. You said Cheteshwar Pujara, Rohit Sharma have played international cricket and they've come back. But I'm more interested in players who've actually made a mark in international cricket, players who've found it, you know, they probably suffered a lack in form or injuries and they've been left out and, you know, they find their route back to international cricket a lot harder. I could quote Lakshmipathy Balaji as an example. Or guys like Abhimanyu Mithun, who flew to the West Indies, played a test match, but not, was not considered as a replacement in England. How do you see their routes?
How do I see their what?
The route back into the national team. I mean, basically, I think we are Chandra is more worried about how people like Abhimanyu Mithun or Balaji, or even for that matter, Harbhajan Singh, who have tasted success.
Went to Australia, right? So it's not as if he's out of the national setup. Abhimanyu Mithun was part of the team that went to Australia.
Abhimanyu Mithun, yes. I think there might be a factual error there where Abhimanyu Mithun was actually even in England where he played a couple of test matches. Yeah, not Mithun. I think Mukund was, but not
Yeah,
Mithun.
Mokan, Mithun wasn't there, Gautam. I was my
Well,
concern as a fan is, you know, you see these names being reserves in test squad, but they actually don't get to play a game. So why can't we use the eight tours to give them a berth in the starting 11?
I agree with that. But Mukund again is part of the A team
No,
that
we were
has
talking
gone.
about Mithun, so I think
Okay, I'm getting confused between Mukund and Mithun. Who is the man we're discussing?
We're talking about Abhimanyu Mithun, the fast bowler from Karnataka.
Right. Okay. So I guess, yeah, you can make a case for Abhimanyu Mithun having gotten a little bit of a rough deal because he probably got a very difficult series to start with in Sri Lanka, which is very batting friendly pitches. But even if you look at his domestic record, Mithun had one outstanding season, and after that, he's also fallen off a bit. So, in a sense, if you want to make your way back to the team, at least the first thing before the A tour, the domestic record has to be right, has to, you know, make a compelling case for you.
Yes, I agree to that, Saurabh. And I think we're seeing a lot of, especially the competition has become pretty intense these days when you see a lot of talent, you know, coming through the IPL. And Muthu, I know that you've been following the IPL and being a wicketkeeper yourself, I'm quite sure that you're second to none when trying to analyze batsmen and bowlers from behind the wickets. And I mean, you know, we're a nation that loves talking about youngsters who come through the ranks. I vividly recall days where we used to rave about a Rohit Sharma or a Cheteshwar Pujara or even a player as recent as Varun Aaron, primarily for breaking the 150 kilometers per hour barrier. And from a batting perspective, Muthu, you often hear the commentators, you know, use the phrase proper cricketing strokes, which means that the player's technique isn't confined to the walls of T20 cricket. Anyone in particular that has excited you to an extent that you feel he's worth throwing into the 4 5-day cricket arena? Muthu?
Okay, as you rightly initiated, started off with this, I see Ridhwan Saha as a prominent batsman. We see a lot of we see him as a lo as a wicket keeper, but I see him I see as a lot of batsmen in present in him. Recently, he helped as he was there for Central Zone versus East Zone match, and he scored his 170, and he was the player of the match also. He was also has come from Bengal background. We also know historically, like how people from Bengal background have started to make it to the big stage, and they have also struggled a lot. And their performance was much demanding in some our selection side, or maybe because of the kind of opponents they play, their chances are very narrow. So in that aspect, I see Ridhwan Saha is the right choice, and he is the best choice for playing the dual role of wicketkeeper batsman. And so of all the batsmen they have chosen, yeah, of course Pujara is being the captain of the side, and he's supposedly going to become the number three. Even I'm not too sure at the big stage when he makes it back up now, because unfortunately he was suffering from the knee injury, and then he's now back and he's
Absolutely.
playing as a captain. He's captaining the side, and he's a very good a very good, he can be a very good number three. But I'm doubting when he comes back to the Test 11 to the Indian international side, given the chance that we have Virat Kohli also. How he would be able to make it up to the number three spot, but then he's also a bet on that. Apart from this, as you said, like typical stroke players are there in Ajinkya Rahane, Abhimanyu Mukund. I mean, we have Mukund. But as I said, like of all these batsmen, my bet would be on Saha, and he's my first choice, and then he's been doing good.
It's interesting you mentioned Saha. It's a very interesting perspective, and I've heard different perspectives from Gautam, Saurabh, and from a selectorial point of view, let me just take forward what Saurabh said. He said Abhimanyu Mithun got a raw deal, and I largely agree with that. I mean, I know as fans we generally don't like selectors, and more than that, we hate some of the reasons that they provide us regarding selections and omissions. Because today, especially in the Indian cricket setup, injury and rest are two different words with the same meaning in our dictionary. If I were to ask the three of you to sum it up in one sentence or two, if you were a selector, would you want to go out and defend every individual selection or omission, or does it mandate that the fans are aware of your line of thought? Gautam, let me start with you.
I'm a firm believer, Chandra, here that you need to have a media manager. There's got to be a statement, official statement made. The problem generally lies in silence, and where generally when a reaction comes out, it is mostly because you are forced into it. I mean, I'm not necessarily does it have to be with selection, but it could be anything. Till the sting operation broke out. The inevitable thing of moving people back to the uncapped players back into the auction mode kind of a thing would never have happened if not for this. But coming back to this, I'm not too sure if I was a selector, I wouldn't want to go there and discuss about the reasons as to why reasons as to how a person was selected, or a reasons as to why a person was not selected. But I would. The obvious ones, for example, if you're selecting an Indian team and you left out Zahir Khan on fitness issues, it's got to be it's it you got to make that out public, saying that hey, you've left him out on fitness grounds. You cannot simply come out and say that he's been rested or whatever else. You need to have a statement made from the board through a media manager, or say from the chairman of selectors. A statement has to come out.
Saurabh, do you see it any differently, or do you agree with Gautam?
No, I agree with his point about a media manager telling it out after the selection, giving a proper reason statement about the selection. But I definitely don't think every selection has to be defended in the press, because sometimes there are private reasons for not picking a player which are not necessarily in the best interest that they're made public. you have some information, you pick a team. Based on that, you pick the best team you can. It's not that every decision has to be out in the open and debated and justified, but yeah, a statement will always help about the team selection and about some obvious omissions, or if a new entrant has come in, that just the 2 lines about those, I think that would help. Yeah.
Yes, I agree with that. Muthu, do you see it any differently? Because you're an ardent fan of the game and you're always influenced by the decisions made by the selectors.
Yeah, I think the selection panel, to talk about that, I think they have a recency syndrome. But even then, when I say recency syndrome, they have some kind of inconsistency. That's where the debate that's coming about when we talk about who is omitted and who is selected, everything. When I say this, typical examples are like why Vinit Saxena was missed out. Vinit Saxena was missed out because, I mean, I don't know for what reason, but he had played the boring finals that we saw in earlier January against the Tamil Nadu in the Ranji Trophy final. But he still missed the flight to the India A. And in the bowling, he any side like Sudhindra was from Hyderabad, from Andhra Pradesh. He had 44 wickets, but then he still missed. I don't know for what reason. Avana, this guy was came in as again a replacement for RP Singh. I really don't understand. If they really go by the recent performance and then they analyze and then they pick the team, then there should be a consistency. Still, there is in some kind of inconsistency. Inconsistency. That's what I see. For me, in this particular squad, if you see, Jalaj Saxena and Bhuvnesh Kumar are a bit of surprise for me. So there is some kind of inconsistency. In the way the selection panel goes about it is what I see. That's where the whole debate is.
I agree, Muthu. I agree. You've spoken truly from a fan's heart. So, right, let's move on to the second topic of today's discussion. It's a pretty unique topic in the sense, for one reason, that it's as much as mathematics as it is about cricket. And as Indians, we are no strangers when it comes to complex math. You know, we're a nation that pride ourselves in our mathematical prowess, right from the days of, say, Aryabhatta or a Bhaskara. And interestingly, from a cricket context, V. Jayadevan, a civil engineer from Kerala who's been trying to fight the inadequacies of the controversial Duckworth-Lewis system for almost 12 years right now, he's come up with what he calls a better version, something that we popularly known as the VJD system today. And Saurabh, I'm going to start with you here because I know you've extensively written on this topic. And for the benefit of those who are totally oblivious to this, including myself, can you throw some light on to what all this is about?
I don't know whether I'm the best guy to do that, but from my understanding, they both use very different ways at calculating what the state of a match is at any given point. They calculate what it is, and then they come out with what is a par score, and therefore what you need to score to win. This is obviously for rain-interrupted matches. They both use very different ways, and from whatever I have seen and calculated, I think in normal situations where you expect the interruption to occur at a score that is normal, which is not, let's say, 50 for no loss in 25 overs, that is not a normal score. You hardly expect to see that. But if you have a normal score, most of the projections that Duckworth-Lewis or Jayadevan make seem very reasonable. They're not the same, but there's not that much divergence between the two. But again, I have to stress that I'm not an expert on this. I have not done a huge statistical study on this. This is just what I have observed from whatever cases I have seen. So
If you were
I
to make
think.
a decision, sorry,
Yeah.
Saurabh, go ahead.
No, continue. Ask me.
No, what I wanted to ask you was to sum it up. If you were to make a decision based on the experience and understanding you have, do you think Jayadevan's theory must seriously be put forward? I mean, they rejected it last week, and Sunil Gavaskar openly came and wrote that he's not getting a raw deal, and the ICC are discriminating him. Do you feel there is a compelling case for this to be thrown into the ICC gauntlet once again?
No, I am not actually qualified to make that judgment. I think it'll help if there is an independent and open arbitration where they come out with the reasons and they say that this is why we are choosing method A over method B. Now the other thing is, from what I told you, what I've seen, that there is not much divergence between the two in normal scenarios. So if there is not much divergence and there is a system that is working well, the thinking could also be that, why change it? I mean, for what? For 2 runs here and there. 2 runs is a judgment call at the end of the day. Whether, like in this recent Pakistan versus Sri Lanka first one-day international, the Duckworth target was 135, Jayadevan's was 133. But so if you're chasing 135 or 133, it doesn't really matter. It was a 42 over game. Over 42 overs, 2 runs doesn't really matter that much. So on what basis do you change one method for the other? Now I don't know which one is more statistically valid. And obviously you have to analyze extreme scenarios also, because sometimes they will come to pass. And you have to see which one holds up better. But so far, all that we have seen in the media is Jayadevan pointing out the Duckworth-Lewis flaws. We have not heard back from Duckworth-Lewis. It may be that Jayadevan's method also has flaws. We don't know. So if there has to be a comparison, it should be an open panel that does a comparison with some qualified statisticians there, I guess.
Yes.
And then you can arrive at a decision which is the best method.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense because we need standard ground to compare two different methods. Gautam, let me tap the non-analytical side of your brain. I know Saurabh has come out and said that, 2 runs makes no difference and all that. But we are a nation that's obsessed with numbers. We're a nation that's obsessed with, perfection. As a fan, how do you see it, Gautam?
I mean, again, the concept of having to decide a game by a DL method or by a VJD method, I think it's all because I'm not an expert here again, but I'm making an educated guess here. It's all because of the schedule or because of the games that you have. I mean, it's all driven by television, and if it's a one-day series, I mean, you need to have a bare minimum three, I mean, think 2 days between games or 3 days between games. And you need to move the crew from place A to place B, and it requires time, and you have a slot, and you have an obligation to give that time to the television viewer, and so on and so forth. No other tournament, or at least I'm not aware of any other sport, that for whatever reason, if a game is reduced, makes a call. I mean, probably they make a call in minor league baseball games or minor league cricket games by the toss of a coin or whatever. But nowhere else do you invent a method that decides what is best at that point in time. I know, okay, there's no way that I can understand that either the VJD method or the DL method talks about giving weightage to the phase of play wherein you might be 50 for no loss in 10 overs, or you might have scored some runs in a T20 scenario, runs in the first 10 overs. And then you are expected to score more in the next 10 overs, or expected to score a lot of runs in the last 5 overs. But it will vary from team to team based on the batting sides that they might have, the people that were willing to come in, and whoever else might be bowling at the end, and so on and so forth. There is no, you will not have a situation where a tennis grand slam is decided and reduced from a 5-setter to a 3-setter, or
Absolutely.
football game
Yes,
reduced from
yes.
45 minute a half to a 20 minute a half. So I would think they've got to logically address it. There is no way you can pass off a one day international as a T20 game because of rain reduction. It's a T20 game, it's not a one day international. I cannot buy that as a one day international. So you've got to stop it somewhere, and I think it is largely possible, at least in the tournaments like the World Cup, where they can specifically have these time out, and they can perhaps look to tweak the schedule slightly, little bit. I know that they have a spare day to continue the game the next day in two, but they again have a time slot that is decided by the television crew, and so on and so forth. I think for these unforeseen circumstances that are driven by inclement weather or lack of light or whatever else. They need to have a slightly flexible schedule and finish off the games. And I think that is the only way and the fairest way to decide cricket games.
Muthu, let me move on to you right now. I mean, we've heard Saurav's perspective on this. And as I've been continuously mentioning through this podcast, I really like the fan side of your brain that answers these questions. Do you really think that mathematics should govern the outcome of games?
Yeah, to a certain point, yes, it's, yes, mathematics is fine because we believe in net run rate, we believe in strike rate, we believe in average, we believe in the run rate of the particular game, everything is fine. But when it comes to the mathematics which decides the fate of the game, there's a lot of questions from a fan's perspective. Like, we know that the project, we know the game, if it goes at this rate, the projected score would be this. And if the game is cut short, what would be the fate of it? There is obviously a different strategy. When the Jaden method talks very good about it, but then I'm not going in detail about any methodology over here, because the point is like the strategy of any game is decided before the start of the play. But if there is any external obstruction during the course of the game, then the strategy has to go for a revision, and that strategy depends upon team differs from team to team. And so, getting an external strategy coming into a common consensus between these two things can never go in can never go in line. So there would be always a debate. There will always be an unfair to at least one side is what my point is. So mathematics to a level it can govern the course of the game. Or it can talk about the course of a game, but it should never dictate or decide the fate of the game or the or how a game has to be ended. I won't certainly agree with that.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. I mean, we've heard different perspectives. So it's you're rightly. I mean, I think you're right when you say that strategy is based on numbers that eventually turn up in front of the captain, which is largely agreeable. Or conversely, we could opt for the simple solution that Gautam gave us earlier, just toss of a coin to decide it. After all, it is a toss of a coin that decides who bats first and who bats or who bowls first. Okay, so as a part of Couch Expert's new initiative, we're bringing in a new feature called as What's in a Name. And the reason we're doing this is because, as you would have heard our podcast, we have one of our panelists, Muthukumar Ramamurthy, sitting in the United States, trying to educate the kids of Virginia on how to play the game. And one of the first things that they asked was, who's the greatest player in the game? And Muthukumar Ramamurthy said, Sachin Tendulkar. And they said, I don't understand the pronunciation. How do you pronounce that? But what Muthu failed to realize is that a lot of Indians, India being a very diverse country, even some of our Indians from other states who are not used to the local dialects get it wrong. So today we have with us Kaustubh from Maharashtra, the state from which greats like Gavaskar, Tendulkar, Rahul Dravid basically hail. Of course, Dravid moved to Karnataka, but he's a Marathi by origin. Kaustubh, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thank you.
Kaustubh, I know, I mean, sometimes does it appall you when people like us, get the pronunciation of some of these superstars incorrect? Because I am used to saying Sachin Tendulkar. Is that correct or is that incorrect?
No, it's incorrect actually. See, we have given him a status of God, so we have to pronounce it correctly, God's name. Right?
I agree.
So it's Tendulkar, not Tendulkar. It's a Tendulkar.
Tendulkar.
Sachin okay. Ramesh Tendulkar.
Sachin Ramesh Tendulkar.
Tendulkar. Tendulkar.
Wow, even I'm finding this hard. I wonder how Muthu's going to find it when he's in the US.
Yeah, you will some find of the it other difficult. Names. Gavaskar, you can say.
Gavaskar.
Not Gavaskar, it's Gavaskar.
Gavaskar.
Gavaskar, exactly.
Gavaskar.
Manjrekar.
Manjrekar, wow. I'm finding it hard.
Manjrekar.
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 Wow.
Manzrekar.
it one more time.
Manzrekar.
Manzrekar. Sanjay
I'm finding this.
Manzrekar. Muthu, is this easy for you
Sanjay,
or?
can
No,
you can have
come
mine
on.
also.
Yeah, hearing all these names, now I wonder, really, do I know these people? It has such a different pronunciation is what I feel. But I don't know even the Sachin Tendulkar. How did you pronounce? I don't know. I don't really find a difference in the way that I say and then what Kausub says. But then it seems. When he hears us saying, he hears it something different. It's a similar way that when you speak to a Malayali, Malayali will say that you don't pronounce it correctly with
That's true, that's true.
different kind of
Absolutely.
noun. So it's no weird that a foreigner not saying an Desi name rightly, an Indian name correctly. Even Indians do, we ourselves do not pronounce the names correctly. We even find within a local region, like within South India itself, we don't pronounce it properly. Or within North
Absolutely.
India, they don't pronounce it. So,
Absolutely, Muthu, I agree with that. That's really the
even.
spirit of this feature that we have bought in. So, Kaustubh, probably for the benefit of the audience and in interest of time, can you pronounce these names correctly once again for us?
Oh,
Sachin,
Gautam.
Ramesh, Tendulkar. Yeah, Muthu, tell me.
Yeah, I
You're
was just
saying
about
something.
the list of yeah. I just wanted Gautam to list the names whom we want you to pronounce as the way and Maharashtrian pronounce.
Okay, sure.
Kaustubh, let's start with Sachin Tendulkar.
Sachin Ramesh Tendulkar.
Sunil
Sunil Gavaskar.
Sanjay
Sanjay Manjrekar.
Manjrekar,
Rahul Dravid.
Rahul Dravid, Ajit
Ajit Agarkar.
Agarkar,
Subramaniam
That's a dusra from you, Gautam. That's a dusra from you. We've been expecting this for a while. But thank you, Kaustubh. I think it's certainly, like you rightly said at the start of the show, it's very important that we pronounce God's name correctly. Otherwise, he's definitely not going to shower his darshan on us. So thank you for taking our time off from your schedule to join us today. Muthu, I hope you educate the kids in the United States correctly, because if they pronounce it, well, I don't want to say anything more than that, but I think in the interest of time, you will take into account the right pronunciation and do the right set of knowledge transfer. Gautam, thanks for bringing out those names today.
Thank you.
You do
Thank
realize
you.
that you pronounced everything incorrectly, Gautam, just like what I did.
Absolutely.
Okay, so with that, we wrap up the first edition of What is in a Name. We look forward to joining you next week from a different region, different dialect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So on that note, we come to an end of this edition of Silly Point. Gautam, thanks once again for joining us. We'll definitely keep close tabs on how you continue to climb the page rank on, Google.
Yeah, you do that.
Saurabh, thanks for sharing those wonderful insights on the VJD method and the Duckworth-Lewis system. I'm sure the audience would have had a lot to learn and, take away from your views. We'll look forward to having you once again on Silly Point.
Thanks a lot.
And Muthu, I know it's well past your breakfast time there, so thank you for sacrificing your appetite to stick with us.
Thank you. Yeah, not a problem.
That is
Always, anytime you take it.
unless you want to come out and confess that you were slightly, silently munching waffles while the show was going on. So, right to the audience, thank you for carrying your bat through this edition of Silly Point. We're always looking forward to hearing your feedback. Please write to us and share your opinions, criticism, or if you would be, if you'd like to be a part of our shows, feel free to volunteer and get in touch with us. Conversely, you could also log into our Facebook page and drop a note there for us to have a look at. Have a great week, and until the next edition, it's goodbye from here.